Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Betty Lee Crosby. She is the author of a new novel titled Spare Change. It's a story that sets back in the 1920s, but mainly takes place in the 1950s and 60s when women's issues and women's independence were really being challenged. We're going to have a fun conversation today because we are going to be talking about life during that time. But before we chat with Betty Lee, I'd like you to know her. Originally from New Jersey, Betty now lives in South Florida. Prior to embarking on her career as a novelist, she had a noteworthy career in the advertising industry. In 1997, Betty turned to work of fiction and has not looked back. Her work was first recognized in 2006 when she won the National League of American Pen Women Award for unpublished fiction. Since then, her novels have won 5 more awards, including 3 consecutive Royal Palm Literary Awards, another award from the National League of American Pen Women, and most recently, the Florida Publishers Association President's Book Award Gold Medal. Hi, Betty Lee.
Good morning, Irene. How are you?
I'm doing great. And in your book, I love this line, and I just want to start off with it. And it says, if I had a chance to live my life over, I'd sure do it differently. That's an interesting line because many people say different, that they wouldn't do it differently. But you say that in the book, it's I sure do it differently.
Well, I think that the fun of a story is what you would change. Not if you change nothing, it will be the same as always. And I think people like to look back and see, and this is a setting that was in the 1950s, so things were very different and things were not quite as open and wonderful as women have it today. We can do so much and we have less restrictions as to the horizons we can aspire to.
Things were different in the 50s and 60s, weren't they? I mean, that's an era that I definitely lived in. I didn't marry until into the 60s, so I was, a teen in the 60s, but things, as I look back, were different, and you are right. And so, did you have experience also in that era?
Yes, I did. And I grew up during that era. And actually, when I started my career, I was an enigma because I was able to rise through the ranks and get to the level where I was the senior marketing director and vice president. But that was very unusual. And people used to say to me, my goodness, how did you ever do that? And the truth is, it was probably half luck and some talent and being in the right place at the right time in the right industry. Marketing was a field that was very open to a lot of women, but a lot of other fields were not. Women were really not in fields like law and medicine and things like that. So
it
was very different.
I lived in a small community, and I remember the first time that a female medical doctor came into the community. I mean, that was just really something that was unheard of. But, I mean, she was so popular because, of course, all the women flocked to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I also worked in the 60s. And, we talk about glass ceiling, but like you, I didn't find that glass ceiling. In fact, I could never understand because, first of all, one thing I did work, I had my own business, but then also I went to work with the federal government, and I didn't find that glass ceiling at all.
Yeah. I think it was more prevalent in certain industries.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, marketing was an industry that was pretty open because it was a creative industry. And they found it easier to accept that women could be creative than that women could challenge men in their own arenas that involved technology and mathematics and sciences. So those were the last areas that sort of opened up. But the character in my book faces that kind of thing. She's living in a time when the normal expectation was for women to get married and have babies.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That was. I mean, that was the whole environment was based around family life. And women got married and had babies, and that was the primary aspiration.
And, you know, at one time I thought that was just a cultural thing because that was the expectation for me and by my family. And education, where I grew up in my culture and my family, education was not important because why did you why did you need an education to marry a farmer and be a mother and be a wife? You didn't need the education. So the important thing was to learn how to cook and to plant a garden and to sew and do all those things.
And, you know, a lot of women that attended a secondary school in those days attended a finishing school.
Yes.
Which taught you the right way to set the table and the right way to dress. And we were expected to be perfect wives and mothers,
mm-hmm.
and no one gave a second thought to where we were going to go 50 years from then when we really were prominent in the business place.
That's interesting you say that because I just remembered something that, you know, I used to teach classes for the community services department to women on how to set the table, how to dress. Isn't that
yeah.
funny? Yes, and that was such a 60s and 70s thing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, you know, the offshoot of that was when we got into the 80s and the 90s and we were working women and we were in many cases earning as much as the men were or getting closer to it, closing that gap, what happened is we also expected ourselves to maintain that perfect homemaker and be a perfect competitor in the business place. So therein emerged the superwoman.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you the superwoman too?
Not really. Yeah. I didn't really have a family. Well, I was married, but we didn't have any children. So it was kind of, I was able to focus pretty much on a career.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was a superwoman. I had two children. And a cooker, and the perfect housewife. Until
yeah.
one day, it's like, just a minute here. There's something wrong with this picture. But I think I wasn't the only one. Everybody else was shifting at that same time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are the people that are really fun to write about because you're dealing with the problems that they face and the environment that they lived in. And I just find it was an agent's innocence and an age of tremendous expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So it just offers so much. It's so meaty.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting how when we really sort of stop and think about it and maybe do some research as to how women really were not independent back at that time, especially, you know, in the early of the 1900s and then as we, you know, came into life and in the
yeah.
mids, we were still really not that independent, but then there was all of a sudden that shift.
Yes.
And the women started saying, hey, this doesn't work for us anymore.
That's right. And, you know, all of a sudden there were people like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and
mm-hmm.
Rob Berning, and all of a sudden we discovered we're people.
Yes. And it seems to me, though, I'm thinking that it sort of almost went too far the other way.
It did.
For me, it felt like it.
Well, you know, I think it's like anything. It always ends up being very radical to
yeah.
bring it to a normalcy.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a pendulum that swings one way and then the other way. And the truth is, if left alone, it will come to rest right in the middle.
Exactly, and it does, and it certainly,
yeah.
I think, it has, and I feel it is right now, especially in the Western world, but gosh, you know, when I'm looking at TV and seeing what's happening in some of these countries
yeah.
with the women, they're still very suppressed, but what I'm noticing also is these women are starting to come out, and they want their independence.
Yes, that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true. Some in the third world countries, it's amazing how women really are emerging, and I think it's becoming a worldwide thing. And it's a very good thing because, you know, I think it's good for men as well as for women, because if you look back at the 50s when father knows best and, you know, is the perfect Leave It to Beaver family, well, the woman stayed home, and yes, she had to be the perfect housewife, but you know what? All of the responsibilities for the family and the family's income and the family's well-being fell upon the male.
Yeah.
The father was expected to do all of this. Now, if he lost his job, there was no fallback.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at today's society, so many more couples, I mean, most couples, certainly younger couples especially, they get married. They're mutual partners. One supports the other. And, you know, if one has a problem, the other one picks up the ball and runs with it.
Exactly.
And that's a wonderful thing, because in the long run, it has taken the major burden of being a child care provider and homemaker off of the woman's shoulder and shared it. And by the same token, it's taken the responsibility of being the breadwinner off of the male side and shared it. So it works out very well. It's a nice normalcy.
I think so, too. And what's interesting is that there are a lot of men, the dads, stay at home.
Oh, yeah.
And do the care giving off to the family. And, gosh, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that either. I think it really gives a good balance. And
absolutely.
I think that the children that are growing up under that condition, too, have a better place in society.
Well, you know, I think also what it happens is children emulate what they see at home.
Uh-huh.
And if they grow up in a family that has no aspirations for the mother of the family, then the little girl in the family will grow up with no aspirations.
Exactly.
Because it's an accepted norm. But, you know, when there are two working parents or, you know, one, even if it's a stay-at-home mom, and believe me, I'm not saying there should not be stay-at-home moms. So certainly they're such a valuable contributor. And, you know, I teach Sunday school to children, and many of them are homeschooled.
Yes.
And so the role of stay-at-home mom has expanded so greatly, because they're not just staying home and isolated in their home. They're part of the community now. They're out there. They're helping with the schools. They're helping with volunteerism. I mean, so there's so many things that they do. The real truth is that it's not a question of working or not working. It's a question of discovering yourself.
Exactly.
Discovering all the potential that you have inside of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of really a very exciting thing, both for women and for men. And, you know, for men, there's often a lot of potential that they have the great ability to be a wonderful child care provider.
Exactly. You know,
and now they're free to do it, which is a good thing.
Yes, and it's accepted in society.
Yes.
And that's what's important, too, because, you know, I'm kind of reflecting back as to my father. Yes, he was the breadwinner. He was a farmer, and during the winters, he would go out and work on the oil rigs as a cook, because that was, you know, he was the breadwinner. My mother had never worked. But also, my father was extremely absent emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
and, you know, that was a loss for not only him, but his children.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But that's the way it was in the generations before, too, because the male was the breadwinner and the female, the mother, was the homemaker, and she was the one that did everything at home. And so she was usually the one that was used with the children.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience, as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Betty Lee Crosby, author of Spare Change. It's fun to listen into this conversation, isn't it? If you'd like to check out Betty Lee, her website is BettyLeeCrosby.com.
You know, the 50s are a fun generation to write about because although there was that disparity, there was also so much innocence and so much fun during that time. If you look back at the music that we had and the hula hoops and everything like that, it was a really fun time.
When you talk about music, I just remember when there was just like music that came up and there was jiving came in or the twist or something, and I remember having the music on, and my grandmother happened to be around, and she was appalled. She was appalled the way I was dancing.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Well, you know, the first time that Ed Sullivan, probably people will not even remember Ed Sullivan, but the first time he had Elvis on the on the television show that he had, it was... they had to photograph Elvis from the waist up.
I know.
Because of his movements.
Isn't that
funny? You know, it was great. I mean, that's when young girls really got into it. And that, those are the fun parts of the 50s, and they're the fun things to write about. I mean, just stepping back into that era is just a fun thing.
What was fun for you? It's reflecting back in the 50s and 60s, what was the most fun for you?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'd have to say that just the casualness of friendships and the, you know, the fashions that we wore, the poodle skirts and, sundresses with these pinched-in waists and big billowy skirts. And I had a dress back then that reminded me of the dress the actress wore in Picnic. And, I could just envision myself looking like her, and I probably looked nothing like her. But it was a fun vision for me.
Well, you know, yeah, the fashions were fun, but what's interesting is, did you notice the fashions now?
Oh, yeah.
We're really reflecting back into that era.
Well, you know, a very funny thing. I was visiting with our grandchildren, I think it was last year or a few months back, mm-hmm. and she said, you know what I have? I have a hula hoop. And she brought it out. Now, her mom could not do it.
Uh-huh.
But she said, I said, I can do the hula hoop. She said, get out, Grandma. I said, no, I can. And I still could. That's not something you forget.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know.
This was a totally new thing. It's like, you know, we've discovered this hula hoop and it's so new.
Right. Well, the newness is I saw one the other day and it had like these flickering lights in it. Of course, we didn't have it, you know.
That's technology added.
Right. And so what other things going back into your life in that era that you can tell us about that maybe some ahas that you reflect back?
Let's see. That's kind of tough. I think that some of the things that when I first started to get my first promotions when I was in business, because I started out on the very bottom of the ladder. I started out as a designer. I was on the drawing board, and I was designing packages for pantyhose when they first became popular.
Wow.
And the way I got started writing was I'd design a package, and I was really a kid, and I'd design a package, and the sales rep would come to me and say, okay, can you just write some copy for the back? Whatever you write, that's fine. They really didn't care. They were just trying to blow it off, you know, and pass the buck. But I saw it as a challenge, and I wrote it, and I'd write all this flowering copy about how beautiful and slim you're going to look at these, and went on about it. And, you know, that led to the next step, which ended up, they said, oh, gee, you do a really good job writing. You want to write a company newsletter.
Oh.
So it got started that I actually started out as an artist, and just through osmosis, through change and opportunities, and each time, because of that, each time I got a big promotion, it was like I said, oh, wow, I really lucked out. It took a very long time before I believed that I really earned it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You mentioned pantyhose. Pantyhose. It's like that invention was like sliced bread.
Oh, I know. Before that, they sold stockings in packages, and saleswomen would present the box of stockings to show you the color or whatever. And then it went to pantyhose, and now the trend is, let's get rid of these pantyhose.
No kidding.
That would be a better way.
I don't even own any. I refuse to wear them. But I remember the stockings with that seam up the back, and it was pain to get it straight.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, pantyhose came in. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they hung down around the crotch around the knees, we still
and
wore them.
It's a riot. They would say one size fits all. I have to tell you, you look at a girl who's my height, I'm like 5'1", and small, and then you look at a great big person standing next to you, and you say, the same pantyhose are going to fit both of us? I don't think so.
Exactly.
And they didn't. I mean, mine would either hang down to my knees or hers wouldn't come up past her belly button.
Exactly. And that's me because I'm tall.
So we had the opposite problem.
Than you, exactly. You know, one of the things that for me, too, if I reflect back to the 50s and 60s, is there was more socializing in a different way. And maybe I'm thinking of that because I came from a community that did not have telephones. And we would just pick up and go and visit.
It was very different then. First of all, if you did have a telephone, you had one telephone, and it was in the hallway. and
it was a party line.
Yes, it was a party line, and a lot of times you'd have to listen to see if anyone was on there.
Yes.
But I remember we had a, it was like a heater room, and there was like a furnace in there. And if you stretched the telephone cord around, you could slip into there and talk privately. But that was as a kid, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, I did. But relationships were very different then because there was much more socializing. People did things as families as opposed to now. Gee, you know, we've kind of lost that art of socializing. I don't know that we've lost it, but it's changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Because the world has changed. Technology has brought so much innovation into our life. And instead of calling each other on the phone or going to visit, we text or we send an email.
Yeah.
And life is moving at a faster pace. So I choose to think that we haven't lost the art of communication. It's just changed to be very different.
Well, it certainly is different because, as I said before, you know, I remember just being like, okay, let's go and visit so-and-so, get the kids together, we get in the car, and away we go. And if they're home, fine, we just pop in and you visit. If they're not, you find somebody else to go and visit. Now we make appointments. We put it on our calendars to make arrangements for maybe going out for dinner with someone or, you know, inviting somebody for dinner, and it's usually like 2 weeks from now, you know.
Yes.
Because we're so busy.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's true.
I'm not sure if that change is good.
Well, you know, it's definitely different. I mean, that's why a lot of times I will write about not so much current time, not exactly this current time, but not what I would consider historical fiction, because for me, I think the time that's really fun to write about is in the 50s and the 60s and even in the 20s. I do a lot in the 20s because those were times when there was so much change going on and women faced different obstacles, and it's just so much more picturesque to write about.
Yeah, well.
So I find that very fascinating.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I've always loved history. I never was big for geography, but I loved history.
Well, especially, I like history too, and especially when it comes to the lives of the people of that particular area.
Yes.
Betty Lee, do you think that the women, let's go to the 50s and 60s, do you think the women longed for something different than what they were doing?
I think probably some did and some didn't. I think some were very happy. I mean, this was the norm. This was what their friends were doing.
Right.
It was the person that did want to do something beyond that that was the exception. And those people had their frustrations in moving out of that norm, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're the ones that are fun to write about. It's the people who are breaking the mold.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they did. I mean, and they faced a lot of frustrations in doing it. But it's like today, even today, there are people who, if you can't be a dreamer or you can't find the new world or the new medicine or the technological miracle, if you're not willing to step out of the mold, if you're not willing to step up and follow what you believe in, follow your dream.
That is so, so well said, Betty, and I think that that's where we're going to close it. This conversation, I know we can go on for hours here because we both came from that era. But what you just said, I think, just sums it all up. Thank you so much for...
It's been my pleasure, Irene.
It's been my pleasure, too. And listeners, we've been talking to Betty Lee Crosby and her book, Spare Change. Check it out because it's a really, really good book, and I think that you'll find it humorous and yet thought-provoking. And as you've heard so far in this interview with Betty Lee, she's very well-versed in what she writes about in the book, something that we talked about today. So do check it out again. It's Spare Change by Betty Lee Crosby. You can also find out more information about Betty Lee on her website, BettyLeeCrosby.com. And I'll spell this for you because Betty is spelled B-E-T-T-E, and it's Lee, L-E-E, Crosby, C-R-O-S-B-Y.com. And this is Irene Watson. Thanks for listening. I'm with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.